ಸುಧರ್ಮಾಸ್ತೆ ಮಯಿ ಸಂತು ತೇ ಮಯಿ ಸಂತು. ಓಂ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ. ವಿ ಟೇಕ್ ಅಪ್ ದ ಸ್ಟಡಿ ಆಫ್ ದಿ ಛಾಂದೋಗ್ಯ ಉಪನಿಷತ್ ಅಂಡ್ ವಿ ಶಾಲ್ ಕಮೆನ್ಸ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ದಿ ಥರ್ಡ್ ಸೆಕ್ಷನ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಫಿಫ್ತ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ವೇರ್ ದಿ ಮೇಜರ್ ಟೀಚಿಂಗ್ಸ್ ಕಮೆನ್ಸ್. The Upanishads are meditations principally which are intended to act as correctives to the binding effects that are produced by the phenomena of natural processes. While what we call a natural process subjects us to its own laws, these laws can be overcome and their imposition upon the individual can be escaped by techniques of meditation. The philosophy of the Upanishad is that it is an ignorance of the way in which the universe works which binds the individual to samsara, to birth and death. Our sorrows are therefore in a way created by our own selves. Our sorrows are created by ourselves because they follow as a consequence of our not abiding by the law of the universe. The affirmation of reality is independent of what really is called ego. That is the center of personality. This affirmation of individuality, jivatva, personality, or something separate from the organic structure of creation is the cause of the sorrow or the suffering of the jiva, the individual manifested due to the affirmation of the ego. Births and deaths are the punishments, as it were, meted out to the individual in order that it may be reformed in the field of experience of the world for the purpose of enabling it to return to the normal state of consciousness, which is universality of being, of which it is deprived at present due to the ignorance of its connection with the universe and a false notion that it has about its own self, that is, an independence of its own. The sections of the Chandogya Upanishad which we are going to study are a gradational ascent of knowledge for the purpose of meditation, which take us from the phenomena of ordinary experience such as birth and death and bondage of every kind to the methods of transcending all sorrow, whatever be its nature, and regaining the originality of being. The various chapters that follow from the point we commence are a systematic teaching on what you may call adhyatma vidya or atma vidya, the knowledge of the ultimate self, which is the only remedy for the sorrows of earthly existence. This section, which we are about to commence, is a treatment on a particular method of meditation called usually Panchagni Vidya, the knowledge of the five fires, by which the Upanishad means the various processes of manifestation, evolution, you may call it, into one's bondage, and the way in which the cycle of transmigration rotates or revolves. There is a coming and going, descending and ascending in this samsara chakra or the revolving wheel of bondage. How it happens and how one can be free from it? What are the methods to be employed for the purpose of freeing oneself from the clutches of this involuntary law that imposes itself upon us and binds us to its own mandates, so that we do not seem to have any say in the matter of birth or death, or even the experiences that we have to pass through? The law of the universe is so vast in its magnitude that it weighs heavy upon us when it is not followed. This question of the bondage of the soul brought about by its own ignorance and the various remedies, therefore, are discussed in these various sections. While the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is more transcendent in its approach and provides techniques of meditation which are far above the reaches of the ordinary mind, as an ultimate solution for every kind of problem, the Chandogya Upanishad, which is not so transcendent in its approach, takes us along the paths of ordinary experience and then finally lifts us above into the empyrean of supreme transcendence. Often scholars have held the opinion that the Brihadaranyaka is aprapancha in its view, and the Chandogya is saprapancha, which means to say that the Brihadaranyaka has concerned itself more with the ultimate absolute, and every solution is from the point of view of the absolute only. So it has taken the final step in setting about finding a remedy for the problems of life. While the ordinary lesser means of approach also have been taken into consideration in the Chandogya, though the ultimate aim is the same here also as the Brihadaranyaka. So the Brihadaranyaka and the Chandogya form a sort of complementary aspects of a single study of the major Upanishads, of which these two are the most prominent. The Panchagni Vidya to which reference has been made is a particular kind of knowledge or meditation which is introduced to read the inner meaning of the ordinary phenomenon of birth and death. What we experience in normal life is only the effect of certain causes which are invisible to the eyes. We see people being born and people dying, but we do not know why people are born and why people die. The causes are unknown to us. What is it that compels a person to be born? And what is it that forces you to die? You know very well, you have no say in either of these ways. You cannot say this or that in respect of these processes. Nor is there any adequate knowledge of the future of one's own experiences. Birth, death and experience in life are all apparently effects produced upon us by causes of which we seem to have no knowledge. The Upanishad in these meditations tries to introduce us into a new type of knowledge, which is the solution to the sorrows that are incumbent upon being subject to these laws of natural phenomena. In this connection, the Upanishad commences with a story. There was a student called Shvetaketu, who was the son of Uddalaka, who again was a descendant in the line of Aruni, the great master. This student was well read and very finely educated. He was so confident about his knowledge that he used to parade his educational caliber in the midst of all learned people, have discussions in courts of kings, etc., and was very reputed for his great educational gift. So this boy, Shvetaketu, went perchance to the court of the king called Jaivali, Pravahana Jaivali, a local emperor. The moment the boy arrived at the court, the king received him with great respect. And after offering him the requisite hospitality, becoming of a Brahmin boy, well versed in the Vedas and all branches of learning, the king puts a question to the boy: are you well educated? Have you studied? Is your education complete? The boy says, yes, my education is complete, I am well read. Shweta Keturu Haruneya Panchalanam Samitimeyaya. The student Shweta Ketu, son of Aruni Uddalaka, came to the court of the Panchalas, the king of Panchalas. Tamha Pravahano Jaivaliruvacha Kumara Anus Tva Ashitat Pita. My dear boy, has your father educated you properly? Are you well read? Was the question of the king. Anuhi Bhagavaiti. The boy said, yes. Then the king put some questions. Naturally, a well-informed person is to be able to answer all these questions. We are proficient in every branch of learning, as the boy professed to be, then he should be able to answer any question which the king posed. So, 5 questions are asked by the king. The first question was, do you know where people go after they depart from this world? Vetha yaditaha adhiprajaha prayanti. When people die, where do they go? Do you know the answer to this question, my dear boy? The boy said, I do not know. I cannot answer this question. Na bhagavai. Then the king asked another question. Do you know where from people come when they are reborn into this world? He said, I do not know this also. Vetha yatha punaravartanta iti na bhagavaiti. Do you know the third question? Have you any idea of the paths along which the souls ascend? The paths being known as the Devayana and the Pitriyana. And do you know the difference between these two paths? Why one is distinct from the other? The boy said, I do not know the answer to this question also. Vetha yataha pathaha devayanasya pitriyanasya cha vyavartana iti na bhagavaiti. Then the fourth question. Vetha yatha asau loko nasampuryate. Why is it that this world is not filled with people? And overflowing. Always the world is able to contain people and it is never overflowing with people. What is the reason for this? This also I do not know, he said. Na bhagavai. Vetha yatha panchamya mahutav apah purushavachaso bhavanti. Then the fifth question is, do you know what are the 5 oblations that are offered on account of which a liquid becomes a human being? This also I do not know. So all these 5 questions were beyond the head of this boy. Then the king said, why you said that you are well read? How is it possible for one to regard oneself as properly educated if he cannot answer even these questions? Athano kivano shishto avochathaha. What made you think that you are well educated? What was it that your father taught you if he has not taught you all these things? The boy was humbled. His pride vanished. He began to realize that there are things which he could not understand. So his education was not complete. This was the first time he was taken aback from the conviction that you knew everything. Atha nu ki manushishtaha avajatha yohi manina vidyat katham sa anushishta bruvetiti sahayastaha pitur arthamiyaya. Though the king asked him to stay, he ran shamefaced back to the father. He did not stay in the palace. And in the intensity of discomfiture, he rushed to the father and told the father, how is it that you told me once that I have been well educated and I have been informed in every branch of learning? This is what you told me one day. You told me that there is nothing more for me to learn, that I have completed my education. The father said, yes, what about it? No, he said, it is not like that. This fellow of a king put me some questions and I could not even answer one. Ananushishyavava kila ma bhagavan abravi danutva ashishamiti. Not properly educating me, you merely told me that you have educated me. Panchama Rajanya Bandhu, he was so annoyed with the king, he called him a fellow of a king. Panchama, this so-called king, put me 5 questions. and I am not able to understand even one of them. Panchama rajanya bandhu prashnan aprachit tesham na ekanchana ashakam vibhaktu. Sahovacha yatha matvam tada eta etan avadaha yatha ahamesham na ekanchana veda yad yaham imam avedishyam katham te navachya. What are the questions? The boy repeated all the five questions. These are the five questions that were put to me by the king. What are the answers to these questions? He asked the father. The father said, if I knew the answers to these questions, naturally I would have taught you. I myself do not know what these mean. So naturally, I have taught you what I knew. And these are things which are beyond myself also. I have never heard of these things. So, how is it possible for me to give a reply to these queries? Let us both go as students before the king. This is the only alternative left to us. We shall learn this knowledge from the king himself and we have to go as humble students. The boy said, you yourself go, I am not coming. He was so much ashamed that he did not want to show his face before the king again. So the father went. The boy did not go. Saha Gautamaha Rajna Ardhamiyaya. The father humbly went to the court of the king. Tasmaiha Praptaya Arham Chakara. The king, of course, received the great Brahmin with the high honor, with great respect, and showed the required hospitality. And he stayed there for the night, did not say anything. Next morning when the king came to the court, in the assembly, to give audience, the Brahmin also went there. Saha prataha sabhaga udeyaya tam ho vacha manushasya bhagavan gautama vittasya varam vrinithaha. In this Brahmin, Gautama, Uddalaka, entered the court of the king, where the king was seated in his assembly. The king said, O revered one, ask for anything which is of this world. Any material gain, any amount of wealth, whatever you need for your maintenance, ask for it and I am ready to give you. He said, anything that pertains to this world, anything that is human, anything that is material, ask for such boons, I shall give them to you as gifts. The Brahmin said, by God's grace, I have enough of material wealth. I do not need anything of this world. Saho vacha, tavaiva rajan manusham vittam. You keep this wealth for you only. I do not require this wealth. But you give me the replies to the questions you put before my son. Kumarasya ante vacham abhashataha tameva me bruhiti. I have come to you for knowledge, not for wealth, not for any material gift which you are so kindly offering to me, which I do not need. But I want the wisdom of these questions which you posed before my son and which he could not answer. The king was perplexed. He was disturbed in his mind when the Brahmin told this. Saha krachri babhuva. He did not know what to say. Because it is difficult suddenly to impart a knowledge to a person the moment he asks for it. There is some procedure of initiation. There is some tradition of the imparting of knowledge. Also, Kshatriyas do not teach Brahmins. That was the ancient custom. The king was a Kshatriya and now the student here is a Brahmin. Brahmins teach Kshatriyas, Kshatriyas do not teach Brahmins. So, under those circumstances, the king did not know what to tell this Brahmin. So, he was a little bit disturbed in his mind and was thinking as to what to tell him. Saha krachri babhuva. The only thing that the king could tell the Brahmin was, you stay here for some time. We shall think about it. Tam hachiram vasa iti ajnapayan chakara. It is said that he was asked to stay perhaps for a year. That is what the commentators make out. The Brahmin stayed there for 1 year in the palace of the king as a preparatory austerity for the reception of this knowledge. Tagam hovacha yatha matvam gautama avadaha yatha iyam na prat tvatta pura vidya brahmanan gachati. O revered Brahmin, you asked me to give you the knowledge of these things which has been kept as a secret by the Kshatriyas up to this time. It has never gone to the circle of Brahmins till today. But now the time has come for it to go out of the circle of Kshatriya kings, because you have come to me as a student and you want this knowledge. Tasmadu sarveshu lokeshu kshatriyasyeva prashasanam abhut. Up to this time, because of this secret of knowledge which the kings held, they were predominant everywhere. They could rule over everybody. Because the power that they wielded due to the knowledge that they held. And now you want to get the secret out of me? Anyhow, the king was ready. He was not reluctant. He was prepared to share this knowledge with the Brahmin, the elderly man, but who came as a humble student in the ordinary tradition of obedience and humility. Tasmai hovacha. Now is the actual answer which follows in respect of every one of these questions which the king put to the boy. These answers which the king gives are certain meditations. They are processes of the attunement of the mind to higher levels of being. They are called vidyas because they are specific types of knowledge. Vidya also means a meditation, a contemplation. A higher knowledge is called vidya, something superior to ordinary knowledge, scientific or artistic knowledge, etc. The superiority of a knowledge arises on account of the fact of its being more inclusive in its character than all ordinary branches of learning. Every branch of learning in this world is isolated in the sense that it bears no connection to other branches of learning. You know this very well. A person who is proficient in one branch need not be proficient in another branch. And therefore, there is limitedness of this knowledge. Our knowledge is finite. It is not all comprehensive. Whatever be the education of a person, he cannot become all-knowing. There is something which he does not know, which keeps him subject to the laws of that of which he has no knowledge. What binds us is the ignorance of something which exists somewhere, but about which we have no information at all. Wherever there is ignorance, there is also bondage in respect of that object or that circumstance. When we have a knowledge of a thing, we are not bound to that thing. We have a control over that thing. The greater is the knowledge that we have about anything, the greater is the capacity we have in making it subservient to our own self. But the more is the ignorance we have about a thing, the more we are subservient to its laws. The world binds us. The law of gravitation binds us. The law of nature binds us, because we are not having any adequate knowledge of these laws. We do not know how they operate. And why is it that we have been made subject to these laws? What is wrong with us? We do not know this. There is something fundamentally wrong with every one of us, on account of which the whole world keeps us in subjection. We are under the thumb of every law in the world. The reason is that we are apparently outside the realm of the operation of this law. We are like exiles cast out into the winds. And the law catches hold of our necks, as it were, and compels us to follow its dictates. We cannot overcome the law of gravitation, to give only one instance. We are slaves of the law of gravitation. We can fall down, we can break our legs, we can get drowned, anything can happen to us. Even our very life on earth is based on that law. But this happens because of some limitation in our life. There is some kind of finitude in our own bodies and the entire personality of ours. And so is the case in respect of every other law that operates anywhere. We cannot see things which are not purely sensory or physical. We cannot visualize things which are super physical. We cannot think. We cannot think or understand any aspect of reality which is not in space, which is not in time, and which is not causally related. And outside the realm of our own limited organic personality, we cannot have any real knowledge. So we are finitized, we are bound, we are limited in every respect. The processes of birth and death again are to be explained from this point of view. There is some law which works in some peculiar manner, on account of which we are compelled to follow this course of transmigration. Is anyone prepared to die? But you have no say in the matter. You will die one day or the other. But why should you die? Who tells you that you must die? No one knows this. And if somebody is born, well, it is doubtful if when anyone is born due to the personal wish of anyone, there is some force working again. So is the case with every kind of experience through which we pass. We do not know what will happen to us tomorrow. So much is our ignorance. So that it appears that we are utterly humiliated beings, shamefaced in every way, ignorant to the core, and completely subject to the law of forces of which we have absolutely no knowledge. Now, this Panchagra Vidya is a kind of remedy prescribed by way of a meditation which is regarded as a very great secret by the Upanishadic teachers. And even if you hear it being expounded, you will not be able to understand much out of it. It does not mean that we will get out of the law of nature merely by listening to what the king appears to have said, because they are very great secrets bound up with one's own personal life. To us, they are only theoretical information, like the existence of a fourth dimension, etc. Even if you hear it 100 times, we are not going to enter it, for reasons obvious. Likewise is this Panchagni Vidya or the Vaishvanara Vidya that follows. They will remain as mere doctrines and theoretical informations, because we forget in our own natural ignorance of truth that to the Upanishads, knowledge is the same as practice. A thing that you live in your own personal life is called knowledge. And apart from the fact that it has to be a part of your being, it is also to be comprehensive. You should not exclude any reality or any aspect of manifestation. So these two conditions have to be fulfilled. Neither can we be confident that some aspect of reality is not excluded from our purview, nor are we confident that this knowledge can become part of our vitals. So they will remain mere theorems in the books. But however, we can have an outline of the knowledge which the great king imparted to this circle of Brahmins by way of this initiation called the knowledge of the Panchagri Vidya. So as I mentioned, Vidya means knowledge, meditation, a comprehensive insight into the nature of the reality behind certain phenomena. Now what are these phenomena? An insight into which the Upanishad here tries to give us the phenomena of descent of souls from the other regions into this world, and the phenomena of the ascent of souls from this region to the higher worlds. How souls descend and how souls ascend. When we consider these processes as mere events among many others, they exert a binding influence upon others. We know that people are born, we know people die. This much of knowledge we do have. And perhaps we have also a knowledge that certain actions that we perform are responsible for birth and death and our experiences in life. The good that we do brings good experiences, pleasant ones, and the bad ones produce contrary results. This much of information we have gathered by study, by hearing, etc. But this is not a knowledge that will liberate us. The five fires called Panchagnis mentioned here are not actually fires in the physical sense. They are meditational techniques. The fire here is symbolic of a sacrifice which one performs merely through contemplation. How are these sacrifices performed visibly in the traditional sense of rituals? There is a sacrificial ground. There is a sacred altar. There is a Vedi, as they call it in Sanskrit, the altar into which the holy oblations are offered through the instrumentality of a blazing sacred fire. So, there is the blazing fire flaming forth from the altar. In the holy atmosphere of the Yajnashala. And there is a substance that is offered. That is what is called the charu in Sanskrit, the holy offering. and certain ideas are entertained in the mind of the Yajamana and the Arthi, the performer and the instrument of performance, which are conveyed through the recitation of certain mantras. The mantras that are chanted or recited during the performance of a yajna or a sacrifice are the sacred intentions of the performer expressed in language. So this is the methodology of the performance of a yajna usually. The offerings are made to certain deities. The invocation of a particular celestial, a god or a deity is the intention behind the performance of the yajna. Now the Upanishad here tells us that the whole universal activity of creation may be conceived as such a kind of yajna. If we are unable to conceive the internal connection and the pros and cons and the relative relationships involved in a particular process of creation, we would not be free from the law of subjection to these forces which are responsible for this creation. Again, to repeat, unless we have a practical living knowledge of the various factors that are involved in the process of manifestation or creation, we cannot be free from the law of manifestation. Birth and death are parts of the universal process. What we call the universal process of manifestation is inclusive of every event that takes place anywhere in any manner, including the experiences through which we are passing, etc., etc. The point that the Upanishad would make out is that no event or no experience can be isolated from other experiences. Just as every performance or every item of ritual in a sacrifice is connected to every other item, the whole yajna or the sacrifice is a single comprehensive act of which the various items are only parts integrally connected. The whole universal manifestation is a single process. It is a continuity throughout from beginning to end. And birth and death and phenomenal experiences are not isolated factors. They are connected to ultimate causes. If we can meditate or contemplate the internal connection that obtains between the effects that are visible with the causes that are invisible, then we would be free from the clutches or the harassments of these laws which are operating outside us. There are various stages of manifestation. Here, a specific type of manifestation is under consideration for the purpose of meditation. How the birth of an individual takes place, how a child is born, is the actual question on hand. We are so ignorant that we think that the child is born from the womb of the mother. We know only that much. But this is the least type of knowledge that one can have about the birth of a child. The child is not pushed out of the womb of the mother merely as if by magic. It is a tremendous process that takes place throughout the cosmos. All the officials of the government of the universe are active in the production of a single child anywhere. The whole universe vibrates with action. Even if a single baby is to be born somewhere in the corner of a house, it is not a simple phenomenon of a little child coming out unknown somewhere in a nook and corner of the world as people ignorantly behave or believe. The whole universe feels the presence and the birth of a single child anywhere. So what produces the child is not the father, not the mother. It is the whole cosmos that produces the child. The whole universe is the parent of this little baby. It may be a human baby or subhuman or superhuman. Whatever be the character of that child, even if it may be an inorganic production, an ejection of an electron from the composition of a molecule, this also can be regarded as the birth of a child. And it is made possible by the operation of cosmic factors. The whole universe is our father. Whole universe is our mother. The universe is the parent. That is the cause. And even if a little sneeze is jetted forth from your nostrils, you will realize that ultimately it has some connection with the universal cause. Even the great Narayana and Vaikuntha will know that you are sneezing here. The Upanishad tells us this great secret of cosmic interconnectedness and involution of factors which are unknown to the senses and unthinkable to the mind. And there is no such thing as a private act in this world. There is no such thing as my child and your child also. If this secret is known, no one will say it is my son, my daughter. It is neither yours nor anybody's. It belongs to that from where it has come. And from where has it come? It has come from every cell of the universe. It has not come from the cellular essence of the father or the mother, as it is ignorantly believed. It is the quintessence of every particle of the whole of nature, so that the whole cosmos is reflected in every body. That is why we say the whole Brahmanda is in the Pindanda. The whole cosmos is reverberating and reflected in a little baby. So how can you say it is your child? It is the child of the whole cosmos. So it is to take care of it. And it withdraws it when it is to be summoned back. It projects it when it is to be sent back for reasons which are known to the universal law alone. So this is the philosophical background of the great vidya called Panchayatana Vidya, about which we have to proceed further. Hari Om Tat Sat.